Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the November 2016 edition of Ask a Voter. This is my standing tradition, and when on California's primary and the U.S. general elections to bring on the show, I dial up a whole batch of guests who weigh in with their voting stories. On today's election day, we'll hear from UCI Chancellor Howard Gilman, Carl Olson, UCI student and college Republican, Carol Terrell and Claudia Pogreba from Madison, Wisconsin, and then to wrap up, Deborah Van Cleve, who will speak from Tallahassee and Miami Beach, that battleground zone. And joining me in this electoral escapade is KUCI intern Noah Stein, joining me in Studio A. Noah, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
All right. Noah's going to be taking the class. And so tell us briefly what you want to do with your show.
Well, hopefully, my main passion is cars and motorsport, so I hope to do a show like that next quarter.
Well, we're going to be racing with a pole position to all early voters and then to the rest of the voters. We'll be right back after a short station break with our leadoff voter, top anteater, Chancellor Howard Gilman. Be right back. Our first voter today, it's my pleasure to bring to you, is the top anteater, Chancellor Howard Gilman, who is political science, law, and history professor here at UCI. And I would like to ask you, Chancellor Gilman, when did you first register to vote, and what were the circumstances at that time?
So I first registered to vote in the late 1970s. I was 18 and really excited about the opportunity, because a lot was churning in the country in the 70s. We had just gotten through the Watergate crisis. And one of the reasons why I devoted my life to the study of American democracy and the Constitution was I was transfixed by Watergate and that huge battle. And so I was eager to get in and to be able to participate fully in the electoral process. And the first big election I had a chance to vote in was the 1980 presidential election.
When you say participate, can you break that down a little bit so we can maybe make it infectious for other people to realize it's not an exotic contact sport. Everybody gets a chance to participate.
Everybody gets a chance to participate. And the nice thing is you can pick your level of participation, right? There are some folks absolutely mobilized and energized. You want to get out there. You have a chance to interact with your colleagues and to make sure that your voice is heard, that they have an opportunity to engage the issues. At the time, I was a college student, and it was an election, maybe kind of like this election, where there were nobody was overly enthusiastic about the options in my peer group.
That was Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan.
Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and John Anderson was the independent candidate. And one of the reasons why he had an independent candidacy was that Democrats were a little bit under the weather because the Carter administration hadn't gone so well. And Reagan was just a bolt out of California and shook up the political system a bit. And if you were on the right, that was a very, very exciting thing. Otherwise, it was an interesting election to engage in, and that was the first chance I had a chance to vote.
And you're a San Fernando / West Side / other Southern Californian located person.
That's right.
You
suffered
from what I did, is that we heard Jimmy Carter concede a loss to Ronald Reagan before some of us had gone to the polling places.
And that was one of the first things that we Californians realized at that time, was that we thought that we were there and very important for the outcome. And we learned before a lot of people ever got to the polls that the presidential election was over anyway.
Yeah. Did that affect the California outcome in some close races, maybe?
I think that there was some worry, especially some Democrats sat on their hands. And the data on how much it affected it, I think, is a little bit of an open question. But whether empirically it shows up or not, it was a little bit dispiriting. And I think now that the networks have been much better, really since that election, at making sure you don't call the final thing until everyone has a fighting chance to get out there and vote.
Well, actually, I was out of state watching closely some campaigning activity, and I think there was a split decision. I'm afraid that I don't think the media shows that kind of restraint. I'm not aware that they do wait, that they're always trying to be the first one to make the call, and there's some sort of commercial incentive for them to do that, so that as soon as the first polls close on the East Coast, I think we're going to be hearing a lot of some momentum-creating kinds of outcomes.
Well, I think that's right. They're trying to focus when the polls close state by state, and then they announce state by state. But yeah, at some point, the momentum is going to be there. It's still going to be a very dramatic evening.
Yes.
I think that
right.
we're all, you know, this reality TV show that we call an election this year is coming up for a very big finale.
So do you consult the Nate Silver website for what's happening?
Absolutely. If you really want to know what's happening, it's very difficult just in the talking heads to get a sense of what's really going on, because the partisans on one side are going to spin it one way, the partisans on another side a different way. When Nate Silver, back when he was still with the New York Times, decided to take a much more empirical and systematic approach to it, it really added a layer of sophistication to an understanding of what is really true. And so Nate Silver has a terrific blog. He explains very carefully what he thinks the percentages are. The New York Times then has also picked that up.
Right.
And is also very systematic. And anyone who really wants to know the lay of the land, there's tremendous amount of information out there about the percentages and the likelihoods and a state-by-state analysis. It's much more robust and exciting for people who care about politics than was the day when I was growing up.
Right, right. Well, and I happen to notice there's patterns. There's of the results of his data. It's a, there's a sort of a cycling pattern, arcing, dropping off, and it's repeating itself. It's the third round since June, and it's really a. It's one wonders where that line is going to how closely those lines are going to converge once again.
And at some point, we get to not just imagine what the so-called prediction markets are like based on this data. We actually just get to do the thing you're supposed to do in the end, vote and then see how things turn out. And let's keep our fingers crossed that one way or the other, the vote resolves the issue and that we'll know the day after the election more or less what the outcome is.
This actually makes me want to ask about the awesome responsibility voters have to weed through 17 complicated propositions laden yeah. with unintended consequences. Let's hear from a political scientist and administrator, the top administrator at this august educational institution. How do you find sorting through these? You can only say yes or no on these 17 propositions.
And it is an unbelievable burden. The initiative and referenda process in California originated in a very positive way. It was really a popular revolt against an entrenched elite. And California was, along with other Western states, led the way in the early 20th century. And you could make a case that it was a sure way for the people to always make sure that when push comes to shove, they could have the final say. The difficulty, though, is that it has become as much of a special interest driven process as anything. And the amount of information you need as an average voter to sift through this material is extraordinary. One of the reasons why representative government has some value is that you could hire people in an election to be your representatives, and they actually should have the amount of time to collect evidence and to hold hearings and to educate themselves about the issues on your behalf. And when they do a good job, you hire them again. And when they don't do a good job, you hire someone else. Average voters don't have the ability and shouldn't be expected to have the ability to have the depth of knowledge across all of those dimensions that are necessary. And I think it's a problem in the long term for the way California is governed.
Well, Chancellor Gilman, you bring up an interesting point about the office holders, but with term limits, I think we have a lot of institutional memory decline in being able to address the complexities of legislation.
And, you know, term limits came about for very understandable reasons. People were a bit frustrated with the establishment. You know, right now we're thinking this is a very anti-establishment election in many respects. Really, on both sides, we've seen a lot of energy. But that has come up over and over again in American history. And term limits were one way, especially in the 1990s, to see if states could unlock an established group. But there's a big downside to term limits. And that is that the minute you get some people with some expertise in the art of governing and they build relationships and they have a sense of what the issues are, the minute they learn the job, they're not allowed to do the job anymore.
Nuance takes a holiday.
Nuance takes a holiday.
I'm dug under. So as you go about then sorting through complicated propositions, learning about who these candidates are all the way down the ticket, and that's important for all voters to consider. It's not just the top federal offices. Where, Chancellor Gilman, do you go for information about elections?
You know, I go to the newspapers that do an assessment, but the nice thing is you can always find people who will give you an assessment that you think reflects your values. A little bit harder in very local elections to find that, but there's still, if you are affiliated with one of the parties, you can get a party assessment. You on the internet, there are local people who blog, who care about the local elections, and they will do an assessment for you. And the information is out there. And I think it's very difficult just reading the voter pamphlet to get your bearings on what's really going on. And the more that you can get your cues from people that you consider to be reliable sources, I think the more confidence you're going to have that you're not missing something.
Well, it's been such a pleasure, Chancellor Gilman, having you today on this edition, this 2016 edition of Ask a Leader, bringing your radio announcing savvy from the 70s, 80s?
Yes, correct? That's the 1970s. I spent a year on KKZZ Lancaster Palmdale. That's
okay, right up there. And joining us today with your political science savvy. And you are a stakeholder in terms of you're both a constituent and an administrator of an institution that can rock and roll and reel with any of the political developments as outcomes of this election.
That's right. And we all are impacted by some aspect of the election. So let's make sure every person listening, get out there and vote. There are consequences one way or the other. Even if you're not enthusiastic, it matters whether one thing happens or another thing happens. If you don't know where to vote, you reach out to our campus. We'll make sure you know exactly where to go. And let's get out there and demonstrate to the world how a democracy acts.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Chancellor Gilman. Well, that, folks, was Chancellor Gilman. And next, after a short station break, we're going to bring on College Republican Carl Olson. Stay tuned. My next guest is another anteater, a little bit different place on the food chain here. He is Carl Olson, a college Republican. And tell us what year student you are here, Carl.
So I'm a fourth year student.
Okay.
Studying exercise sciences and music performance.
Oh, wow. And exercise science, that is leading edge science happening here on this campus. I interviewed Professor Hicks on some of that, so I know what you're up to.
Yeah, I'm in the seminar class with him, and, you know, it's all part of that new initiative that they passed recently that opened up a new undergrad major.
All right. Were you here when Greg Louganis spoke? He was a commencement address speaker for the bioscience school two commencements ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was two, I think. So, well, anyway, we are going to give you the same questions. Carl Olson, when did you first register to vote, and what were the circumstances at that time? I'm not sure we have to go back that far, judging from you.
So I first registered to vote. It was actually back in March.
Of 2016?
Of 2016.
Oh, really? What was the hurry?
So it was actually the morning of my 21st birthday. My license had expired.
Did somebody not tell you you could have voted 4 years ago? 3 years ago? All right. So
I wasn't the most politically savvy at that point.
Okay.
I'm starting a little late to the game, I suppose.
And you'll never miss one again.
Let's hope not. But so I'm sitting in the DMV, actually, on my 21st birthday, just kind of waiting because the license had to get renewed and all that. And the DMV had a, you know, handy dandy form like, oh, would you like to register to vote while you're here? And I'm like, okay, just knock it all out at once. So that's when I registered and started really reading up and looking into where I'm going to end up casting my vote.
Okay. So the circumstances were that you decided it was put in front of you, if you weren't at the DMV, do you think it might have taken you a little longer to get there?
It might have taken me a little longer, but I already had set my mind that this is like the election I would vote in.
Okay.
Because back in 2012, I was 17, so I couldn't vote then.
So I just want to say to my college Republican friend, you can see where paternalism takes us, that there is a law requiring the newly registered drivers to sign up to register to vote as well. So I gotta say paternalism can bring, it's a net for everybody. Well, tell us, why are you voting today? Go run with it.
Okay, so I voted last week because I vote for my county back at home, and so I send in a ballot.
Can we ask what county?
Fresno County.
Oh yeah.
Around Clovis. So, you know, the issues of, like, you know, the local representatives and, like, the school board, those are all very specific to me. And so,
okay,
that's,
you're
that's
following
my
it
own.
From here.
Yeah.
Well done.
I had to do a bunch of reading for that. But so sort of my philosophy when it comes to voting is I believe everyone should choose a very personal reason to vote, not the grandiose ideology of, oh, this candidate will provide the most societal good, in air quotes. Because if you can step back and sort of find a very specific personal reason why you should vote for a candidate, if everyone did that, then you'll get the most effective change out of the election process. And so for that reason, you know, I kind of step back, look at the entire field and decide, okay, this is something that is meaningful to me. And then I proceed and cast a vote.
And I asked the chancellor about his sources of information. What kind of sources inform you, especially because you're long distance? I mean,
So it comes down to a lot of online sources. Of course, for the national stage, you can find things everywhere. But when it comes to sort of the nitpicky local election things, our local newspaper was a really good source, the Fresno Bee.
Okay.
Because they covered all of the local candidates in pretty good detail.
Your mayor is a force to be reckoned with statewide. She tried it. She gave it a go in the primary. But is she on the ballot this year to run for mayor?
No, she's off the ballot now.
She's off the ballot. Okay. Well, remind me. I'm just blanking on the name.
Ashley Swearengen.
Swearengen. That's right. So we'll be. I'm watching her. She's on my radar. So tell us a bit about your involvement. To some extent, the College Republicans, and maybe to a greater extent, the 60 in 16 registration campaign.
Right. So I'm actually the internal vice president for this chapter of the College Republicans. So I handle sort of more or less the internal affairs and whatnot. But in tandem to that, I'm the executive chair of a new organization on campus called the Trans Political Forum, the TPF. Which our sort of mission statement is we like to bridge the political gaps and the aisles by providing a forum for open debate. So right now our membership consists of College Republicans, College Democrats, Burn Eaters, and Yale members. And we all kind of gather together and sort of duke out ideas, political ideologies, etc. One of our meetings just a few weeks ago, we sat there and we went through every single new like proposition and sort of argued over, you know, yes, no. Like, you know, we try to make sure we can inform everyone and, like, I guess solidify our ideas that, you know, you can test them against someone else.
Was your impression that people went away in unison on positions, or did everybody reinforce what they came with, and or did everybody change their positions and they all still came away with different positions?
You know, I think there were a lot of people that sort of, when they go into any sort of political discussion, they go in knowing their answer. They go in just to prove that they're still right. But then again, we had a lot of flip-flopping just, you know, in the room. Because it's important to make sure you hear out all sides of an argument. Really make sure you can humanize any sort of political nuance.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering with a discourse like that, I would give people more credit than it's a flip-flop. It's a little more deliberative, so...
Yeah.
A reconsideration. We'll give,
that's, you know, that's a better way to go.
No, that's because I'm thinking that was a really good forum. So, but were each of these four groups evenly represented?
In the structure, the order of the organization,
in the
yes.
last meeting.
At the
Talking
last meeting.
The props.
No, our Yale chapter is kind of still small and up and running, so there's not as many members of them present. It's actually very heavy on sort of the liberal end of the spectrum. There's a lot of Democrats and a lot of Burn Eaters present, with some Republican presence also to sort of even it out. But at the end of the day, what I found most interesting is these are some of my best friends in this group. Even though they're on completely other sides of the political spectrum, these are the people that I hang out with outside of politics. Yeah, it brings a human aspect to it.
Okay, good. Well, I always like to invite people that are involved with raising voter literacy and voter participation, have them back. I've had the 60 and 16 folks on the show a couple of times, so I hope that you'll keep us on your dance card so we can do that.
Of course.
So when's the next meeting, and how can people follow that?
Okay, so the meetings are held Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. in Moss Cove A, and if you go on our Facebook page, you can just look up the Trans Political Forum at UCI. Trans Political is one word, or TPF is the acronym. And our meetings are held from 6 to 8 on Tuesdays.
Every Tuesday?
Every Tuesday.
Wow. You can't do anything but learn from that. Wonderful. Well, do you want to make here's your last pitch for either voting, getting anteaters out to vote today, and or attend next Tuesday's meeting.
So I think I'm going to have to cast my chips in with, you know, make sure everyone goes out and votes. Even if you feel like neither of the two big heavy candidates is right for you, vote third party, or even just write in whoever your ideal candidate would be. Simply for the reason that I believe that if you choose to abstain from voting, you sort of, in my eyes, lose the right to complain after the results are all said and done. If you did not voice your say, regardless whether or not it would have made any, you know, substantial numerical difference, on principle alone, you don't have the right to then complain to me. So just go out and vote. That way we're all on the same page.
All right. Very good. Well, Carl Olson, internal vice president for the College Republicans. Thanks for being on the show today on Ask a Leader.
Thank you.
We'll be bringing up next, I believe, our friends from Florida. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And all around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me.
Well, applause goes to everybody who's voted or who's on their way. Thanks for joining us. My next guest is Deborah Van Cleve, and she is calling it in from Miami Beach, and she is a retired school administrator. She is one of four daughters of Syrian American extraction. She was raised in Maryland, just outside of D.C., where that Maryland location was. All of the other family members her family members are registered Republicans, as she is apparently not. She attended public schools in Maryland during the period of public integration, and in high school was bused from nearly all white school to a predominantly black high school. She's now retired, as I mentioned, and she lives in Miami Beach, which has a ringside seat of sea level rise. So welcome to Ask a Voter, Deborah Van Cleve.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm pleased to be talking to you.
Deborah has lots to tell us because none of us are in Dade County, and Deborah is. So first of all, Deborah Van Cleve, my standard classic questions, when did you first register to vote and what were the circumstances at that time?
I first registered to vote and voted actually in the 1976 election. When I was 20 years old, I had just finished 2 years of college and I was working full time, and it was a big deal to finally be able to have a voice in the system, and I have voted faithfully ever since then. And yes, you're right, I am indeed a Democrat.
Okay. Why are you voting today?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why I'm voting today. You mentioned sea level rise, and of course, that is a big deal here in Florida. I've been living down here since 2008. And when we first moved down here, the floods in the streets are just unbelievable. We have king tides, and when they come in, you basically can't get across the street. Okay. And so they're doing what they can to raise the streets down here, but that doesn't make the problem go away. And, of course, as everybody knows, Trump is a climate change denier. He thinks that everything is just hunky-dory around the world. And that's not, in fact, true. Our Everglades are suffering. We are losing ground, and we are going to be underwater sooner rather than later unless it's taken seriously and something is done. And the Republicans in general, I think, do not believe in climate change, and certainly Donald Trump does not believe in climate change. But more than that, I'm voting today just because I have never, in all my years of voting, felt as attacked and seeing someone that is so clearly unqualified for a position this important running. And it absolutely terrifies me. So to not vote is simply not an option. And then to not vote, I've heard people say, well, I don't like either candidate, so I'm not going to vote, or I'm going to vote third party. And I just think that is... I don't think that's the right thing to do. This is too important, and I think people really need to cast a vote, or it's going to be counted. So that you can see why I'm out. And I have voted. I voted early.
Okay.
And
were there
actually,
plenty of opportunities
this morning?
Were there plenty of opportunities to vote early in Florida?
Well, there was a bit of a problem to vote early in Florida. They were, because of the threat of the hurricane, they were going to close polling early, and that's they put in a lawsuit, and that was changed so that the polls would be stay open longer. I know that Florida is way ahead in early voting. I think at least half of the state has already voted during early voting.
Oh, wow.
And I particularly did it because in 2008, when we first moved down here, my husband and I registered at the same time and went to the polling place. It was mobbed, and he was handed a regular ballot, and I was handed a provisional ballot. And I never, from that election, I never heard why I was given a provisional ballot, and I never heard whether my vote was counted at all. So this is so important that we made sure to go down there and vote early, and if there were any problems, obviously, I would have been fighting them up to this point.
Okay. So I kept watching with the debate questions that were prepared, and I kept waiting, okay. So when will climate change be put on in the questions? If the candidate stump doesn't include it, what do you think was happening with the debate moderators? They had free range with questions.
I mean, I don't think climate change is important to the people down here who experience it all the time. When it rains, when the king tides come in and so on. But really, we're out of that piece is out of sight of a lot of people that aren't on the coast, and that it's just a non-issue. I mean, I understand. So you have to give some leeway for that. I mean, I also watched all the debates, and the thing that struck me about the debates, not so much that climate change wasn't mentioned as important as it is, but also just the lack of answers that came from obviously one of the candidates, and the clear show of unpreparedness, of no understanding about the way our system works, and no concrete ideas of how to improve anything that's going on. And I also saw a lot of divisiveness and hate, and it's like you say, it's a very scary time.
So what is on your ballot? We know you've got an incumbent trying to hold on to his U.S. Senate seat, Marco Rubio, who put himself back in contention. He wasn't going to run, and then he decided to run. Are there other interesting things on your ballot with respect to propositions or measures locally or statewide?
Well, of course, the marijuana one is on there. Apparently, it didn't make it on some of it's a medical marijuana ballot, but there was one for solar energy, which is, you know, it amazes me how little solar energy is used down here in the state. I thought that was important. It was clearly written to confuse people the way it's written, and to benefit FPL, and which is a huge mistake.
Standing for Florida?
Yeah, Florida Power and Light, yes.
FPL, okay, thank you.
FPL, yeah. So, I mean, those are the ones that stand out in my mind. Marco Rubio said he wasn't going to run. Of course, he turned around and did run. I did not vote for him. I don't know how that is going to turn out. I do know that a lot of people are very disappointed in what he's done so far, and so I think that that's probably going to be a tight race.
So what's the turnout so far? What are there any stories of things happening there in Dade County, among other counties?
Interesting. I passed by my polling place this morning, expecting to see long lines out the door. And from everything I saw there, it's very calm, very quiet, no line out the door. I see a few people walking around with, I voted signs on their stickers. And a little bit earlier, I went to the gym, and that's another polling place. And someone was standing outside directing people to the back of the gym where they were, where the polls are. And I asked her if it has been this quiet all morning, and she said the same thing. She said basically there has been a relatively constant flow, but a small flow, as though most people have already been out and voted.
Okay.
A friend of mine lives on the Point, a couple of blocks away from me, and her polling place is in a retirement community, a big apartment building. And I asked her, I sent her a text this morning because I was curious, since it's so quiet elsewhere, where I've been. And she said that actually her place was mobbed and that it was very busy and people were in line for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes waiting to get through to vote. And so that's one place that people have waited to vote. It's right in its community building.
Can you post, listeners, for those who aren't following exactly what Governor Rick Scott's administration's role in encouraging broader voter participation, can you tell us just a little synopsis of his disposition and what you think is going to be the likely level of participation?
Everything that I hear, I believe that voter registration is way up. I know that this morning I read that Hispanics who didn't vote in 2012, 36% of Hispanics who didn't vote then have already voted here. He has, Governor Scott, as far as I'm concerned, has tried to suppress voter turnout. He's not interested in increasing the length of the polls. He's very anti doing everything to make sure everybody can vote and get out and vote as they should. So the whole, Tallahassee is extremely Republican, and nothing is easy. As my provisional vote will show you, nothing is easy. They will challenge. I think they'll challenge everything they possibly can to affect the outcome of this election.
Okay. So I remember that one thing that one party did was just take buses to every retirement center in Miami and get all the seniors to vote reliably for their party. Is that still a thing, or are they all taking Ubers now to their polling place, or do they vote early?
No, it's interesting. I don't know. Actually, my husband is on call today, and
yes,
he volunteered to be alive for anybody who needs a ride to the polls today to vote. And he has not received a single phone call. So I don't know if that means, down here where I am, a lot of people are simply walking to the polls. But I don't know if that means that, as you say, people are Ubering. It's certainly a popular way to get around down here, whether they're bicycling, which is also a way that you see people getting around, whether they voted early. But it's interesting because we thought that he was going to be running around, and he has been on call all morning and has not had to give anybody a ride yet. So he will wait till, I think it's 9 o'clock tonight. He's on standby for anybody who needs to vote to go out and vote, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you on not a whole lot of notice, Deborah Van Cleve, who's calling it in from Miami Beach. That's Dade County, that's Florida, and that's a battleground state. Thank you for being on the show today. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
We'll be right back after station break, where we're going to hear from our lady pair in Madison, Wisconsin, and tell us how it's going on. Be right back. It's so hard to put down Leonard Bernstein's America. I love this, and I hope you do too. And it's setting the mood for racking up the votes. Thanks for staying with us. My next two guests are calling it in from Madison, Wisconsin. They are Carol Terrell and Claudia Pogreba. They are stalwart grassroots participants who live each aspect of their lives with intention. We should all be so good at what every opportunity that they take in these their many really wholesome choices. Along with their voting story, they're going to offer their dedication to getting out the vote today. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Carol Terrell and Claudia Pogreba.
Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you, Claudia.
Okay. So, is that Carol and Claudia in that order? And every time, just remind us which one's which.
Okay.
Okay. So, I'm going to ask Carol Terrell first. When did you first register to vote, and what were the circumstances at that time?
Oh, I've registered to vote as soon as I turned 18 and knew how to find the place to register. And I haven't missed a regular national, state, or local election since then.
Bravo.
But it was a long time ago. It was that I first registered. Claudia, why don't you go?
This is Claudia,
Thank you.
I registered to vote when I was 18 because my grandfather at the time was a progressive Republican who was congressman from the 3rd, well, he was not in office then, but had been in office as the congressman, Republican progressive from the 3rd Congressional District in Wisconsin.
Wow.
So politics was in our genetic code.
Okay. So any other circumstances at that time besides family tree stuff?
Well, it was Barry Goldwater and JFK, and it was about that time that my mother left the Republican Party for obvious reasons.
Wow, wow. Wait, now Barry Goldwater ran against LBJ, JFK.
Right, in 1964, I believe it was.
Right. So do you remember back to that potent ad that every single political columnist goes back to, with the daisy that the petals are being pulled
off?
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. And then wasn't it "In Your Heart, You Know"? Wasn't that the slogan? "In Your Heart, You Know"? Was that part of Gary Goldwater?
It was. "Deep in your heart, you know" is right. I was in fourth grade, and I coined an expression I thought worked with a rhyme with that, and it ends with a bad-sounding word at the end. I'm not going to do it. "Deep in your heart, you know"
I like you a lot.
And "deep in your heart, you know" he's a, and that rhymes with heart at the end. So.
Yes.
And I didn't know how bad that word was, and I was reprimanded. And then in those days, I thought everybody was only in one party, and I know better than that living in Orange County. So,
Right.
So, both of you, tell us, why are you voting today?
Well, actually,
this is Carol.
I voted 2 hours after early voting started in Madison, Wisconsin on September 26th. It was fantastic. We just walked over to our local library, my husband and I, and very quickly we were done registering and done actually getting our ballot and doing it in secret and handing it in.
Well done. Claudia, I think that was Carol. Claudia?
Yep, that was Carol. This is Claudia. I voted on September 26th. We had a rally at the Capitol downtown with Russ Feingold, who's running for U.S. Senator, Tammy Baldwin, our current U.S. Senator, and it was really a celebratory rally celebrating the beginning of early voting here in Madison because the federal courts had just reinstated our right to early vote after Scott Walker's voter ID law, which had taken it away from us.
The governor.
That was our governor, Scott Walker. We sometimes don't often use the governor in front of his first name. What? Who said that?
Okay. I love this. So now that was one. That's one voter. The other voter, why are you voting today?
The other one, I voted September 26th. So
right.
Voting.
I mean, when
why,
you did, why are you
why
voting?
Why am I voting? Because Hillary Clinton obviously is the candidate that represents who America, the United States, really is. She's a candidate for every part of our society, from whites to women to Muslims to African Americans to the gay community, gay lesbian community, to our Latino community, to our Asian community. She represents to me what our democracy needs to be.
And this is Carol.
Yes.
She is a strong, competent woman that I actually started supporting back when Barack Obama ran and won for president. So when she was in the primaries, I was voting for her. And it's just so obvious. We have a clear choice between looking forward with Hillary and looking back to the trickle-down economics and racism and bigotry that is represented by, unfortunately represented by the Republican candidate for president.
So there's two parts of what's going on today is the voter provisions for qualifying to vote today. The eyes have been on Wisconsin, among other states, since the Voting Rights Act had been revamped by the Supreme Court. So what kind of voter barriers are you dealing with? And then we'll let you talk about your getting out the vote today or your poll watching, too.
Yeah, this is Carol. We've had a roller coaster with our Wisconsin voter ID law, which was passed in 2010, soon after Governor Walker was elected for the first time. And he had both houses were of our legislature were Republican-dominated. So they pretty much had a walk as to whatever they wanted to have. That law really restricted who could vote, who could register. They had to have incredible documentation, and it went into effect immediately. So in the April election, after Walker gets in January, we already were having to deal with the restrictions on who could vote. Fortunately, the Government Accountability Board said that it was a trial run of those provisions, and so if somebody couldn't meet those provisions, they were supposed to be taking down information about the problems but allowing the person to vote. Soon thereafter, there were legal challenges and stuff, but it wasn't until the end of July of 2016, literally just a few months ago, that our side was able to get a federal court judge to agree that the voter ID provisions were incredibly administrative, technical, and very problematic for people who couldn't easily find a birth certificate, don't drive anymore, or haven't learned to drive yet, and therefore didn't have a Wisconsin driver's license, people who didn't have a way to get to the place that you could get a voter ID, which was the sparsely located around the state, the Department of Motor Vehicle in the Department of Transportation. It was just horrendous. Mm. And we had people who had voted, who were in their 90s, who had voted every election, actually had held public office, and yet could not produce a birth certificate and therefore were being denied the right to register under the new voter ID law. It was wonderful when we had the federal judges ruling in late July, but immediately there was an appeal by the Republican Party, and that didn't get settled until August 22nd. So here we are approaching an election. We'd already gone through a primary on August 9th with all the old rules, I mean the voter ID law, restricting who could come and vote and what kind of documentation they had to have. So that was a mess of an election. But once the appeal was denied, we were able to roll back the 10 work days of, you know, the normal working days that were allowed for early voting. We were able to roll that back to September 26, which is 5 weeks, total difference. And the voter ID law had said that there couldn't be more than one municipal polling place per municipality, which is fine in a local town, but is terrible in the city of Milwaukee, which is huge and sprawling and has lots of population, or in the city of Madison or Green Bay, which are very large populations also. So unfortunately, my Claudia is phoning in her numbers.
Right.
She'll be back as soon as she can. But
that's what it's like. That's what poll watching
with
is.
The Democratic coordinated campaign. And oh, she's back.
I'm back.
Okay.
we coordinate with the Democratic coordinated campaign, and we report how many TERFs go out, how many volunteers we have out, and we've been working with them on getting out the vote for the last 2 months.
And so, Claudia, I'd just like to add a little background what Carol was explaining
please.
About the legal challenges to our right to vote here in Wisconsin.
Please do.
That when that passed, that immediately what was that form that was so proactive that positioned us to be able to implement early voting once we got it back again was a voter coalition that was made up of volunteers from different neighborhood action teams like ours, the NAACP, and the League for Women Voters. It was a nonpartisan coalition. And we were actively working with VoteWriters.org, with Molly McGrath, who is the national coordinator who was sent to Wisconsin because of our restricted law that was in place at the time. And we started right away doing all kinds of PR, event planning, really going out and educating people and getting them registered early on, so that once the courts gave us a final decision in August, we were ready to roll.
Well done. So that takeaway, folks, coalitions, mobilizing, all those things have to happen, and you can get outcomes that live out in posterity with everybody getting involved. So you have called in the numbers at 20 minutes after the hour, and then I guess 10 minutes before the hour. So how is it looking in your particular polling place that you're watching and getting out the vote?
Well, this is Claudia. Our particular team oversees 15 wards in the city.
Wow.
And and we're supposed to be a little bit limited with data that we actually share. But of those 15 wards, we do multiple what we call passes going out and making sure people are aware of all the voting information they need to have, including polling places,
right.
Hours of operation. And we even gently ask them, you know, think about your day if you're a worker. Do you have a plan to vote?
Okay. Wow.
So we try to be as proactive, and we keep going back. And what is challenging for us is that most of the people in our area are high apartment condominium dwellers. So we need to go back several times to actually ever hope to getting into a building. And we do it all legally. The people that we contact, we actually have their names, and they have given us permission to do follow-up contacts with them.
So
we're not ever violating any law at all times, but we go back, and what's so exciting about this election
yes.
is you can't believe the age range of people that are helping us, from
okay.
millennials, tons, and this is for Carol and I. We've been on many national elections, and the vast number of millennials that are volunteering to help us.
And they learn
seniors,
so much.
Retired people like us.
It's fulfilling. It's edifying. It's all those things. Well, we have much more to say. You've got a battleground state situation with the U.S. Senate seat that's, I'm not sure if it's sort of a toss-up, but I'm hoping for a great turnout, and the great turnouts usually give us pretty good outcomes. So
that's
thank
right.
you. I want to thank...
Boy, do we know that.
Boy, do we know that. Well, you two are real... role models for all of us, Carol Terrell and Claudia Pogreba. Thank you so much for being on Ask a Leader today.
Thank you, Claudia.
And
I'm
luck.
Honored.
Honored. Bye. I'm honored with the two of you being on. Take good care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. I want to remind everybody, polls are open tonight until 8 p.m. here in California. And I want you, please make sure you bring a friend, bring a child, or a cherished elder who could use a ride. Tomorrow night, the National Geo Series on climate change is going to be entitled Years of Living Dangerously, with include our own former UCI hydrologist, he's now at Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Jay Famiglietti, laying it out for Don Cheadle. Well, that was my wrap. Next week, we'll hear from three UCI Law School students, Olivia Weber, Ali Chabot, and Laura Lively, and they'll speak about campus pharmacists in the UC system. They penned quite the op-ed piece in the LA Times recently about the access availability of birth control on campus. Talk with you next week. Thank you for voting. Thank you for voting. And thanks for listening.